I always wanted to know who the best player was on tour simply because I wanted to actually work as hard. And then I ran into a little guy by the name of George Knutson out of Canada. And I watched him hit the golf ball. I watched him with the wide stance, taking the club back way inside, releasing the club. One of the greatest ball strikers I'd ever seen.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the McKellar Golf Podcast. My name is Lawrence Donegan and I'm joined by my good pal co-host, Mr. Jeff Shackelford. How are you doing, Shaq?
I'm doing better than you. It sounds like you're a little jet lag from your journey back from Pinehurst.
Yep, I was up this morning and we are recording. I don't even know what day it is.
It would be Tuesday. Yeah.
Oh, it's Tuesday, Christ. up at 2:45 a.m. Over at Pinehurst for a few days. Young Mr. Niall Shields Donegan is playing in the Wake Forest Invitational. Very good tournament, actually. Some really good players got a chance to see. Actually, the tournament was won by a kid I've been going on this podcast, Jeff Jackson Coyven, a freshman at Auburn, probably the best freshman in the country. Anyway, it's one of these things. I don't know why they do this, Jeff. It was a tied first place, and both guys are called winners. It's a bit weird, isn't it?
Yeah, that is. Is it because of the day that the days are short and they don't have time for a playoff?
Well, no, I don't think so. I think when there's a, for instance, at the Cabo Collegiate, there was an exemption to a PGA Tour event was available. So that would have gone to a playoff. But apparently, I mean, I didn't know this, but apparently if people tie, then everybody's a winner. Everybody gets a trophy.
You'd think they would designate, maybe a three-hole playoff on the card kind of thing, and the last three holes or something, and then if they're still tied, then call it a tie. That's odd. Well, I'm sure that's the statisticians that are at Clipped will figure out what that means for the rankings.
It was quite illuminating actually being down there, Jeff. Just the number of parents out following their kids. I don't know how they do it. You know, stressing on every single shot. You know, if somebody makes a putt, they're kind of punching the air quietly, politely punching the air. But I mean, it's just gruesome. Why do people put themselves through this? Now I disappeared off to the other side of the golf course. Now we'll be playing on the back nine. I'd be over in the front nine. I wasn't having any part of that because that is a pretty stressful golf course to watch your kid play golf on, I would imagine, and pretty stressful to play. I thought they'd knocked about 500 yards off it, but it was playing at 7,200 yards. A little bit soft, Jeff, but what a test of golf it is. My goodness. I can't imagine what it'd be like when it's running in June speed, US Open speed. My goodness, the greens, obviously the surface area of the greens is large enough in places, but the actual green sizes with the runoffs are pretty, pretty tiny. And it was Bermuda stuff. The grit is very grainy, the fringes and beyond. Mm-hmm. My goodness, what a test of golf! The winning score, Jeff, I think it was one under par one with a 70 or 75 of the really, really top T1 college golfers. So there you go. It just puts into perspective Martin Kaymer 65-65 in the opening 2 days in 2014. So it should be still a great golf course. It's a beautiful walk, Jeff. I don't know how far the ropes will be back at the US Open, but good viewing course, I think. So looking forward to it. Really whet my appetite for the US Open. And let's see, now that you've kind of seen the golf course up close, it'll be interesting to see how the top players in the world tackle it. Once again, Jeff, just a quick plug for college golf. Again, just fantastic. Walking down the fairways behind guys, watching them play. You know, you don't want to get too close when they're on the greens, but you can sneak up there and have a look and take a photograph. And it's just a wonderful experience, especially the weather was lovely. It wasn't super hot, but it was nice and temperate, good for my Scottish blood. And if you get the chance, if you listen to this, you get the chance to go watch college golf, you do yourself a favor and go. I came home, landed in San Francisco at 10 a.m. and I tried to run up to watch another couple of hours of the San Jose State event at the wonderful Meadow Club, the McKenzie course up there in Marin County. But it was pouring rain and I'd had enough of it. But a full three or four days of college golf. Thoroughly enjoyed it, and really, as I say, really whet my appetite for the US Open.
And do the coaches, are they out holding the flag, or is that only when there are television cameras around? Okay.
They are there. It was really funny. I can't name, some of them are just crazy. They're off their heads, these guys. I have one in particular who actually I was chatting to him. He's really a good guy, actually, but just manic. I mean, just
college coaching is not fun right now at any level. The everything that's going on and the NIL and the entitlement and
that's
transfer portals.
There was a pal of mine's, I need to be careful how I frame this, is involved in that world. And he just said that there's one particular agency just right now is just ruining the whole thing and fueling all sorts of bad behaviors and greed. It's not what the NIL was supposed to be about, but it's awful. I think what's going on is pretty awful. And there's one particular agency that is fueling it. It's essentially hoovering up kids, getting them to sign contracts for a pittance, which, again, I haven't seen the contracts, but again, these contracts are pretty one-sided for the sake of what, I don't know what these NIL deals would be worth, $5,000 a year, $10,000 a year.
But they do have, that rule is still in place where a player signs that, but when they turn professional, it only lasts until while they're an amateur, correct? And then they can they kind of open up to negotiation again. And the only reason I know that is because all the sharks that were out circling Gordon Sargent last year at the Masters, making sure that he saw them, because I was asking somebody, why are all these agents out here? I thought he had an agent. And then it was explained to me that component. I assume that hasn't changed, right?
Yeah, that I my understanding, because I haven't seen these contracts, but I think there are, the deals only last till the end of college, but there is either an implied sense of obligation,
well, sure,
or there is some kind of, you know, right of first refusal written into the contracts. But again, I don't know. I haven't seen one of the contracts. I would imagine that would be the case. Otherwise, what would be the incentive for these vulture agents to be, you know, signing up kids by the dozen? Why would they be doing that unless there's something for them at the end of the NIL contract? Anyway, it's a long way from what the NIL stuff was meant to be about. I think it's, from my understanding, it's fueling all sorts of bad behavior and entitlement. And oh my goodness, it's a shark infested world out there, Jeff.
The good news is the professional game is completely free of all that and in wonderful place and all about honor and integrity and not about the money.
Oh man. At every level, my agent friend was just saying the game is fucked. It's at every kind of level. It's and the sadness is the people, there are good guys out there, good agents out there, you know, trying to do the right thing. And what happens when you try to do the right thing? You just get eaten alive by these sharks who will just do anything. They might follow the rules, but not certainly not the spirit of what it was all about. It's a mess. It's an absolute mess. Nobody knows what goes on, and the NCAA doesn't give a shit. Just like the scoring college golf, they sold it off to some dodgy company. And now you have to scan around the internet trying to find college scores. Absolutely disastrous. The same is going with this NIL stuff. There's all sorts of predators out there behaving in all sorts of nefarious ways. And it seems like the NCAA doesn't care. I'm guessing golf is not a high priority for them. It doesn't bring in any TV money, really. Although I did notice that the Golf Channel isn't completely out. There's the Darius Rucker event is on TV this week, and I think the event from the Western Intercollegiate is on from Paso Tiempo next month. So that should be something to look forward to. And then we've got the Jeff Shackelford NC2A Championships at La Costa. That was your idea.
Why are you? Oh. Please. No, it was not. All it was a suggestion that Coach Fields followed through on with his fine donors and the Omni people. But yeah, that's I did see their televising. I did see one of the broadcast analysts or reporters tweeted a photo of the of the announcer setup, and it looked like they were working out of a prison. It was definitely the low budget operation this week. But hey, at least they're still televising some of the events. Not quite all that they had been doing, but they're still doing some.
Yeah, I think that area is ripe for exploitation is probably the wrong word in the context of this conversation. But, you know, if there was an enterprising streaming service or somebody got into that market, I'm not sure if it would be financially viable, but I'm sure there would be a small dedicated audience for it, I'm sure.
Pretty sure they tried that, and the numbers weren't great. In fact, you told me of the numbers. You saw them.
Right.
Yeah, so let's.
I think there was one from Bandon Dunes, and I think there was 11 people watching on Twitter or something. It was not a triumph. Anyway, we'll crack on. A busy, incredibly busy week. For those who want to catch up on everything that happened, you can obviously listen to this podcast, but you can also get subscribing to Jeff's newsletter, on Substack, the Quadrilateral. How's it going, Jeff? Is it lots of new subscribers recently?
Yeah, all good, and mercifully, the this week's news and notes is mostly about nice, light, fluffy things off the golf course at the Masters, and we're getting close, and it's exciting, and gonna spend too much time on a few of the topics we're gonna discuss because we've discussed before, this saga in pro golf is just gonna be a long, ongoing process. So I'm much more excited about the new $99 Taste of the Masters option for the folks in the world who are on Ozempic, or I don't know what they're going for, but it's just a phenomenal thing they do, where you can buy this cool little thing with the cups anyway, so that's the kind of news I'm excited about this week. It's just more the major championship world, and been reading up on the total eclipse, which is going to happen Masters Monday, which is very exciting, and all sorts of, you know, light fare.
How's the accommodations this year, prices wise? Is it the same as usual? Crazy.
You know, I booked early, so I'm not too bad. I haven't gone back to look, but the last time I looked, Airbnbs were ridiculous, and the hotels were even more ridiculous. So yes, I think a lot of people will be there, and a lot of things are booked, and everything's kind of like it normally is.
Yeah, just for the U.S. Open, we had a lovely Airbnb in Pinehurst, about, you know, 3 or 4 minutes drive from the golf course, for $118 a night. It's $2,000 a night.
No. Yeah.
The week of the US Open. So, but whoever gets it, you know, they're going to be quite pleased with their accommodation. It's a really lovely spot. It backs out onto, I think it's number six.
It's right on the course.
Yeah, right on the course. Oh, well, $2,000 a night is very reasonable. One thing that you didn't get in your newsletter this week was, because it came out today, the news, not your newsletter, was that Liv backed out of the sort of official golf world ranking saga. Liv have decided to not even bother with their application. They're going to stop and just let it go. Can I ask you, Jeff, why are they doing that? I don't get the strategy. There's clearly some kind of strategy behind it.
Well, I am preparing to write a little something in the newsletter about that. So I've been mulling. I was hoping, well, you and I argued about it in our pre-show meeting. We don't quite agree. Yeah, we don't quite agree on the responsibility of the World Golf Ranking to tell them what they have to do. But I feel like they should be giving them some guidance. And it sounds like from this letter, they've really gotten no guidance as to what specifically is needed to be eligible. And I can understand, I'm struggling to understand why the ranking can't do that, because they could certainly give them some guidance, and they can give them whatever they want, it sounds like. So your guess is as good as mine as to why they did this, but I think they've realized that there's no point in resubmitting an application without knowing what it is they have to do. So they just decided to keep it in the news. And it's obviously a part of this tug of war. And I don't see the downside of it at this point, because it's pretty clear that the ranking board isn't in any hurry to help them out. So I think they're trying to work the news cycle, and you know, their brand is a little bit of an aggrievement thing, and we're the victims, and we're the little guy backed by the $700 billion fund, and that stuff works with some people. And you know, and we know they've been, until this Anthony Kim debacle, they've been building a really nice case for having made some accommodations, but with the qualifying, and they've added more players, and there's fewer Poulters and Westwoods and crappy Majestics or whatever they're called, you know, dragging the thing down. So I suppose they just decided that, well, we need to, and who knows, it could even be a distraction play from something else that we don't understand. So I think it's a little early to tell, but they clearly wanted the letter out, didn't they?
They really did. Well, actually, after our pre-podcast meeting, such that it was, I went and had a look at when Peter Dawson, the chairman of the OGWR board, announced that they wouldn't be getting ranking points. He sent them a letter and explained why they weren't getting points. It was a purely technical thing. There was nothing, you know, vindictive about it. I think I wrote down the reasons. The tournament format wasn't to the OGWR's liking. Limited access, limited relegation. I think the mix between team and individual golf is a real problem. You had that, I think it was Taylor Gooch. You know, people playing, you know, two types of golf at the same time was a problem.
Well,
and slightly, yeah.
There was one incident, Sebastian Munoz,
right,
okay, lagged a putt up instead of trying to make it, because he knew for the team element that par was all they needed to win the team. And I guess at the time I thought that was a red flag too. But since then, I don't see any instance. It's kind of like if Pete Rose bet on baseball, and he always bet on his team to win, and it's been held against him since. Now, if he'd been betting on his team to lose, it's a problem. But if he was always betting on them to win, then he's just an idiot, and he's just betting to bet because he's an addict. And I can't think of a scenario where somebody would intentionally play in a way that is somehow problematic for the league or for the rankings. That Munoz hurt his own cause. He didn't hurt anybody else's cause. And I guess that's where I started to struggle after believing the team thing was a problem. I haven't been able to come up with a scenario where somebody's intentionally sabotaging their play in a way that should be of concern to the world golf ranking.
Well, I think what the problem is that both types of golf might provoke a different course of action. So if you need if you've got a 45-foot putt and you need a par for the team championship, you're more inclined to lay it up. If you're trying to do your very best, you might have a go at the 45-foot putt and run it.
I understand.
Run it past. Yeah. So again, it's when I say it out loud, it sounds like a kind of minor corruption, but I'm guessing it exists and it's legitimate, surely.
Well, why is it corruption? It's only hurting the player in the scheme of the rankings. He's only hurting himself lagging the putt. He's not hurting anybody else in the field. I guess he's maybe helping somebody.
Yeah.
But he's not intentionally helping somebody. He's trying to win a team thing. It has nothing to do with trying to help an individual. So I don't know. I'm not seeing that one as being as much of a problem anymore.
I get it. But I mean, so the point being that, you know, Greg Norman, you are right. I mean, grievance is part of the brand. There's no question about that. That's what his statement today. Unfortunately, the OGWR has shown little willingness to work with us. Well, you know, why don't you work with them? and attempts to get clarity on what was necessary to meet certain criteria were unsuccessful. So why don't you go back? Why don't you come up with some ideas, Greg, and go back to Peter Dawson and say, how about this? I mean, I mean, it's not, surely it's not Peter Dawson's job to instruct you live golf how to get a you know, to come up with ideas for their format. It's not his job, surely.
Well, I don't understand why he can't respond with, well, if
but
you
he
get
did.
To this number, well, but there are not a lot of specifics, though. And I guess that's where I struggle. And then I guess part of the reason I struggle more with it now than I did at the time he wrote the letter back, because I just assumed, okay, they would retool, come up with some tweaks, and then resubmit. And that part hasn't happened, as based on the way Norman letter describes it. What I don't get is, since then, or I guess what I would say is, what troubles me since then is the leading tour that gets way too many world ranking points is coming back down to Liv's level in many ways. I mean, we have Bay Hill this week with 69 players. There is a cut only because it was Arnold's event. And what is the cut? I mean, the cut's going to cut very few people. They don't have a team component, but they are, their response to Liv has watered down the PGA Tour. So the ranking board, you know, they're dealing with two entities here, and one is actually kind of playing into the hand of the other. And so I guess I'm finding Liv's case to have been strengthened in part by the tweak they made with the qualifying. And then I guess I really think about it more in the sense that their hand's been strengthened by the PGA Tour kind of stooping down and lowering their thresholds and all that stuff that they've done. So to me, it's a problem for the ranking board credibility wise that they can't give them. I mean, they can give them specifics that are things they'll know they'll never meet. I mean, give them something. And maybe they have, privately or quietly, but on the record, as far as we know, they have not.
I'm guessing, whatever you want to say, is that they've said this team thing's not going to work for us. However, here's what I think Liv are up to, is that at this stage of the proceedings, you're dead right, by the way. You know, as Liv's kind of gone up the way a little bit, the PGA Tour has gone down. You know, they're becoming, you know, they're coming together almost, not quite together. But at this stage, OGWR is so denuded and lacking in credibility. You know, and Liv pulling away from it and having nothing to do, it's probably going to add to that, you know, loss of credibility. At some stage,
it's in their interest to get them trying.
That's right. Yeah, because
to be a part
at
of
some
it.
Stage, some stage over the next 6, 9, 12 months, I mean, people are, I mean, you listen to podcasts, and people are now just talking about the Data Golf World rankings. I saw a Matt Fitzpatrick interview yesterday, and he said, well, I don't even look at OGWR now. I look at the Data Golf World ranking. Oh, that was pretty, that was ouch. That wouldn't have gone down well. That won't go down well at the USGA Champions Dinner if there is such a thing.
I think you and I agree that somebody at Augusta National took a peek at that list, and that's how the Olesen exemption came about, because at the time he was very high up on that list. I think he was 35th or 4th, so we noted that, and when you have people starting to say that kind of thing, and there's also the underlying hostility already of the Europeans, the Asian tour type players, you know, that this is already excessively now in the camp of the PGA Tour after all the years of lobbying they did. That's not helping the situation. The 54 hole event at Pebble didn't help. Yeah, just all these little things. And so to me, it's almost, if the world ranking wants to remain relevant, they're the ones who should be aggressive, saying to Liv, this is what you need to do. And even if it's stuff they can't do, at least they're trying to show that they're trying to maintain some credibility.
Yeah. You're winning the round, Jeff, actually. I have to say, actually, we're talking it out here. I did notice that Greg, I don't know if he said it explicitly, I just read the reports, I didn't read the entire statement, but that they're kind of looking to the majors to, you know, give access, you know, to live players. We're going to try and get access for our players to the major championships. Given that the Masters, well, it's the four major championships, they were the ones who decided on they were the only members of the board who left unaccused when Liv was denied his world ranking points. And given that when Neiman got his invite for the Masters, he didn't even mention, you know, he's won $8.6 million on Live Golf this year.
They have ridiculous purses. But yeah, no, they didn't mention it. And that was funny and noticeable. And that's their prerogative at Augusta to do that. And look, I've thought before all of this, I thought they all rely too much on the rankings, particularly the Masters, where I would much rather see them award tournament winners around the world. Take chip 10 spots off the rankings. This is before all this. I felt way too many spots just based on an algorithm. And when you could be giving... Yeah, imagine if the BMW PGA winner at Wentworth is an automatic Masters. It just there's something they get that's an intangible in terms of marketing from that, and there's just something more notable to me awarding a winner of a tournament in another part of the world versus just jockeying on ranking points. And now more than ever, that looks silly. And I mean, I didn't get in the newsletter, but this guy won the Argentine Open on Sunday, and the RNA for some reason since 2017 gives a spot to that. And I have Mason Anderson, an American, got it. But you know what?
He won a tournament.
It was and it was a thing to. It's a tournament winner, and even that's better than the Open qualifying series in a way, because now that kind of can be diluted a little bit the way they've adjusted on that, where somebody, well, anyway, we can go down that rat hole. The point is, I do think that the way this is headed, that the majors will have to make some adjustments when it comes to how many spots they give these ranked players. And I realize they're on the board and that they'll be saying that this ranking isn't legit, but their main objective needs to be protecting their championships. And I believe all four of them, maybe the PGA of America is a little dicey on this, but the other three will continue to place importance on their championship over the needs of the rankings. I don't know, but that's my hunch, because they know their credibility is on the line with those events. And obviously the USGA and RNA are in a little better spot because they are opens and they have so many spots already that come through qualifying. And we've seen the last few years, they are cherishing that as much as ever and protecting that as much as ever. And you even see the RNA kind of almost trying to get a few more spots from just pure qualifying after taking a lot away from it. And I don't know anybody who's opposed to that.
I think the Argentine Open thing might be a Roberto De Vincenzo. Might have something to do.
It started after he passed in for Liverpool, but I was surprised that it continued. But it's in line with trying to put together a field of.
I think it's great.
An international field, exactly. Yeah, and so it's now a Korn Ferry event instead of a PGA Latino America, which actually strengthens the case because it's probably a better field.
I'm sure the RNA was hoping for a South American winner, not a graduate of Arizona State University.
Mason Anderson, about as American sounding name as you could get. And
Here, the other thing, I want to talk about it later, Jeff. I talk about the state of the June the 6th affairs. But
no.
We will talk about that in a bit. But the fact that Liv are throwing in the towel on OGR thing, that doesn't augur well. I mean, that's not fraternal behavior, I don't think. It's another straw in the wind, but we'll come on to that.
That's a great point. Yes.
Yeah. The just quickly on the Live the event of the weekend, it was won by Joaquin Neiman. As I said, that's him up to $8.2 million in three events. He won by two shots. He made some. You did mention this in the newsletter, Jeff, but he was asked to now make you a favorite for the Masters. He said, "How can it be? I'm only ranked 100 in the world." was quite funny. People took.
I thought it was an attempt at humor. I saw, and people were really angry. I think it just
really
spoke to. Yeah, there were a lot of reactions immediately, and I don't use Twitter a lot, but I went on and I woke to that, and I was like, "Geez, he's just making a little flippant joke." And I think if he had delivered it with a smile, maybe that would have helped. I don't know, but boy, people were. They were all, let it go. You got your invite. Calm down.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. I think everybody's getting the nerves are a little frayed at this point.
I thought it was a great joke, given it wasn't his first language. Really quite good. I guess we should quickly touch on. I was listening to the No Laying Up podcast on the flight back, and they were chatting about the whole Anthony Kim thing. There seems to be a lot going on there, Jeff. There was lots of hints.
That's just the nose alone.
Well, to me, he did shoot. I mean, the last people in the world to report this. So it's 76, 76, 74. I didn't see a single shot on the golf course, I'll admit. Yeah, I did see some swings on Twitter. Looked pretty good. I mean,
yeah.
I did see a shank and whatever. We'll see. Yeah. I mean, to be expected better than you thought, or just exactly what you thought? Been out for 12 years, coming back and finishing. He finished dead last, 11 shots behind the guy who was second last. Yeah.
It was better than I thought because, as far as we know, he didn't play any tune-up events. It certainly helped playing in front of no people. I don't know. Was that an homage to the pandemic? What were they going? Was it just there was the people loved the team championship so much that they just couldn't get excited about the, 6 months later? Oh, geez, you got the phone on the ringer on. It was just pitiful. There were no people. So that helped because if he had played in front of crowds. And by the way, I think Faraday hilariously, you just missed the crowds. Like David did not have a good week. He sounded jet lagged the whole time. As good as he sounded so far this year, he just did not sound into the Jetta event. And God, he and Fultz were just landed on so thick with Anthony Kim and this amazing story. Like, oh, guys, don't you need, they need to go back and read the stuff that went on with him. Don't hit your wagon to this guy. He's a flake. Maybe he's grown up a little, but my God, you look at him and he looks 60 years old. The whole side of his face, one eye's way higher than the other, the nose. I'm assuming he must have been in a very serious accident or something because there's just no way that's just age. Something happened. And I guess we'll find out. We were teased many times that the parts I watched that we're going to get more of his story at some point. But he could have played way worse being that rusty. But Lawrence, the damage they did by having him there, and again they had some momentum and like, what are you doing? And it's just such a freak show element, and it just seemed like just the kind of stupid thing that Greg Norman would do, and his desire to be where we're going to be young and edgy and all that. I mean, God, Greg, grow up. He really put himself, he wedded himself to this thing. This is his thing, Greg. So, good luck with that.
You get any insight on, the planning on this, Jeff? When it was kind of organized, or did you hear anything?
I've been hearing it came together pretty quickly, and Liv got aggressive once he was talking to the tour, trying to understand what his situation, how it would work with major medicals and sponsor invites and all that. And then Liv got involved. I know Norman's kind of implied like he was some sort of mentor for a long time. And I think you'll be shocked to learn that is probably not the truth. And he just is a craven attention whore who just thinks that's the key to this thing. And man, what again, just stupid. And you see why some of these people have either quit or been fired. That we know are quality executives with track records in the kind of in the sports business world. That you just can't, if you've got this kind of a guy and he's thinking this way, you can't compete with it if he's got the ear of the Saudis. And But I think a huge blunder on their part in every way.
Yeah.
And so.
Yeah. So, yeah. In terms of the brand, I mean, such a brand as you did speak about earlier about My Majestics. I don't want to get into it too because it's too upsetting for me. My football team lost as well at the weekend. The Majestics finishing last. There's going to be some. I think they've got another 2 years. I mean, goodness me! Thank goodness. I'm guessing the live guys are thinking, thank goodness we only paid these guys $10 million each. But Majestics aren't. They're probably the worst team in live. So buck up, guys. The other thing, just more live stuff. Actually, it's PGA Tour live related. You didn't see the McIlroy comments. He was asked about Chubby Chandler. Chubby Chandler had given an interview. Suggesting various levels of interest from McIlroy. I think he started off, he wouldn't be surprised if McIlroy signed with Liv, and then he put it at a 10% chance, and then he might put it at a 5% chance. McIlroy, I can't believe McIlroy at his presser last week at the, we're still calling it the Honda Classic, or the is it Cognizant? Anyway.
Cognizant Classic in the Palm Beaches. Yeah.
Right, okay. Well, that'll probably be the only mention that event we'll get in this podcast. I thought it was weird. He was asked about it. McIlroy, instead of just brushing it off. Well, you never know. Chubby might know a few things. And then he said, went on to say something else. Stay tuned. I can't remember the exact wording. It was, anyway, wasn't a fact. He was clearly having a laugh, but it was just one of those things. I just wondered why he was nibbling. I thought it was a bit odd. And I just wondered, Jeff, did that pique your interest?
Yeah, I read the transcript and then I watched the video, and I'm in the minority on this. I thought he was sort of trolling and going for a deep sarcasm, just throwing stuff around to make people run around in circles and figure things out. You told me you felt like that was at this age and with his intelligence that you didn't agree that was the case, because you just felt like that was inviting more scrutiny and drama. And we've seen this year, he seems to be trying to get that off his lap. So I think you may be right. So I thought it was odd. But I'm still sticking with trolling and just having some fun. And I maybe thinking that Chubby's not playing with a full deck at this point, and Rory thinking everybody knows that. And was just kind of going along with the fun of it, and then not probably realizing most people don't know that Chubby used to be his agent and all the backstory there. And so tough one to read, but it's clear between that and Keith Pelley's comments that I know we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
Again, there's just a clear divide here now that Rory wants to finish his career as an international player. And his peers on the PGA Tour want to be the APGA Tour, the grown-up AJGA, and just playing in America and wear their Titleist hats and never have to leave their enclaves. And he's totally opposed to that. And how it ends up, knowing that, I think is going to be really fascinating if that leads to some sort of a European, more time in Europe. I think it's going to be interesting.
I thought it was interesting, and he was the one that floated. It was when he did float the idea of an Indian Premier League cricket type thing, you know, that's an adjunct to the main events in the cricket season. It's not a hit and giggle. It's very, very, very popular. He was the one that floated that idea. I would be surprised if he wasn't, he hasn't been musing on that and hasn't been investigating that kind of thing. There's a lot of money. If you look at the money outside the United States that is into golf, you look at Rolex, you look at Johan Rupert. What are Johan Rupert's doing for golf in South Africa? It's just astonishing, by the way, Jeff. It is brilliant, and they are producing some great players, lots of tournaments. These young kids,
my head's still spinning from the kid shooting 62 in the final round, going off the 10th tee of the first Africa amateur. I know scores have been low these days, but still just blows my mind. And then I saw Christo's number one now in the world amateur ranking. I only know that
Oh,
because the
that,
PGA Tour is now licking their chops. They want to get their hands on him. That was on their social.
yeah. Well, bad news. I think he'll lose his spot next week. I think Michael Thorbjørnsen, the Stanford kid, won today, won a big event at Kolesi, obviously. So he'll go back to number one. But you look at the guy who runs, I can't remember his name, the guy who runs Hero Motorcycles. There's a lot of money floating around out there, and it wouldn't require too much work. Well, maybe it would require a lot of work, but to put something together that would be quite appealing, open to all. I'm guessing if you get open to all, then that gives the guy will have a motivation to play in it. If McIlroy goes and plays in it, that adds instant credibility. Anyway, stay tuned on that. I think there might be a. I thought it was a bit odd that he even bit on the subject, but good on him. And if he is cooking up something along those lines, that would be fun, and it would be a good way of getting back those who might feel wronged him over the events of June the 6th. Actually, did you notice the Seminole pro members? McIlroy played with his dad, but Jimmy Dunn wasn't in the four ball this year. Jeff, did you notice that?
Oh, playing with Jerry and
Yeah,
Rory?
with the McIlroy. Yeah.
I
Ooh.
wouldn't read too much into the. I would not go
No,
too deep
I'm
into
only
trying
joking.
to.
No,
I well, you know, hey, I
no,
mean, it's an
no, no.
observation. I was
No,
more struck by
I was going to say Ed
Ryan.
Hurley. He played in the McIlroy. Hurley, he played
Oh.
with Harrington. Jimmy Dunn was in the group in front, so I'm
Yeah.
sure they're all still
I
buds.
wasn't Ryan Fox's partner, Jimmy.
Jimmy Dunn was Ryan Fox's partner.
Yeah,
That's
that
right.
was an interesting combination, but yeah, anyway, I who knows with that whole thing. I
Who knows? Who
just the whole
cares?
thing exactly. More importantly,
I am
who
so
cares? Yeah.
bored with the Seminole pro member. Who cares? The fifth major, my
Yeah.
arse. So there is that. You mentioned him. Stunning. Kudos to this guy at the Times of London, Tom Kershaw. He had the story last week about Andy Gardner suing the guys who stole his idea and took it to live. So good luck to Andy Gardner. I think he's one of the good guys. Jeff, do we count him as one of the good guys, Andy
Oh,
Gardner?
totally got screwed in this, and
Yeah.
yeah,
Yeah.
I haven't had time to follow up, but I did have a very, very good source tell me, and again, I'm not knocking Tom Kershaw; he's working off some filings, I guess. But he put, did he put? I think it was £10 million settlement
Yeah, that
talks or
didn't.
something.
Yeah, that. Yeah.
That number, I'm told, you need to multiply that by. A lot. Let's put
Yeah.
that number is not accurate. So I don't know. Anyway, I mean, it's long overdue. The Saudis completely stole the idea, and the what is it, Studio 54 or Agents 54 or whatever those guys are named.
Studio
What are, you know, what
54.
do they call that? Studio
Oh.
57. I'm sorry, I'm getting them all confused.
The
But anyway, they work for Liv now. They were with Andy and friends. They brought the decks, the very elaborately conceived ideas that Andy was largely responsible for putting down in writing, as he's told many people when he was doing interviews. He's not anymore. And so yeah, they just stole it. I mean, it's just that simple. And they should be paying him for what he did. And so yes, so I anyway, we'll see. I haven't, I only cover the majors, you know, so I haven't put much time into.
Yeah,
I gotta pin down the details of the taste of the Masters 2 options. That's major championship coverage, Lawrence.
there you go. I think the 10 million might have come from the live side. Yeah, but we're trying to give him 10 million. And Andy
Yeah.
Gardner's like,
If you
no, you're
gave
not.
if you gave Poulter and Westwood each 10 million, I think Andy for coming
Yeah.
up with this concept deserves a little bit more. And by the way, there should be at least 10 million just for compensating him for ruining the team concept with these horrible names. I mean, Jesus, my gosh, what a bastardization of what he had in mind. So, God, those names are brutal.
Anyway, this is a long way of going. I was going to praising Tom Kershaw, who did an interview with Keith Pelley in the
Yes.
Sunday Times, which is part of, it used to be the Sunday Times is a separate newspaper now in the age of, our 2024 newspaper world. There are no standalone Sunday newspapers, not even in the UK. And Tom did an interview with Keith Pelly. I'm guessing it's Keith Pelly's exit interview from the DP World Tour, European Tour as was. A few notable points in it, Jeff. The first being that I'm old enough to remember when Keith Pelly said he was going to be hanging around and leaving around Easter before the Masters, just in time to see the framework agreement.
He's out.
Just to see the framework agreement signed, sealed, and delivered. Now it turns out, and this is a great interview, by the way. Well done to Tom Kreersa. Really good. Keith Pelly is now talking about talking in terms of 1 to 10 year framework, whenever it is.
Yeah.
So that suggests again. I mean, pretty obvious reading of that, isn't there?
Yeah, I was troubled by the second part of that quote. So I'll read the quote. Whether it be 6 months, a year, 2 years, or 10 years, I think people are coming to the realization that a collective product is in the best interest of global golf. It is the only way growth and prize funds continue at this level. It is inevitable. And I guess I realize this is just one quote, I'm cherry picking, but it just gets to the heart of why this is all such a mess and why we're all so bored with it. Their first thought is growth and prize fund growth. And how many more times do we have to establish that the public does not care what the purse is? And they're in this little world and they report to players. I get it. It's a different entity. They're not reporting to owners. They're not reporting to companies. They kind of are reporting to certain companies and corporations. No, but nobody cares if you keep growing. The part of the problem we're in this mess, and the part of the problem the pro game is in such a mess, is it's just been all about growth and it's bloated. It's oversaturated. You hear it in people's comments. Stop using the growth word. You need to actually pare it down, tighten it, and get a freaking off season. Anyway. So that was sad for me to read that's the ultimate thinking, in bringing harmony is it'll allow us to then grow. And it's not working for them.
And whereas the real motivation should be to, as you say, it's not to slim down is the wrong phrasing of it, but to just
tighten,
to make it more
tighten things
tighten
a
up. There you go. Yeah. Tighten and more appealing. And as you are right, I remember the days when and this is maybe 1 or 2 years ago, when the PGA Tour tried to hide the prize money payouts on Sunday. I mean, all they wanted to talk about was FedEx Cup points. And now they're posting, prize money on their social media posts. And, Wyndham Clark wins Pebble Beach and there's a big $3 million on the post. It's really crazy. So there was that. So I'm guessing even an optimist, he's a bright optimistic soul, is Keith Pelly. But I think even he is if I'm reading the tea leaves of that comment, there is nothing happening. There's nothing happening towards some kind of solution. That's which is again. So we're left with what we've got for the next goodness 1 to 10 years. Could you imagine this going on for 10 years, Jeff? What kind of state would professional golf be in after 10 years of this nonsense?
Well, yeah, it's an interesting question because I had somebody make the case that this might not be the worst thing in some respects. It's only bad if you're the PGA Tour, I suppose, going from being kind of the king to just being one of the options for players, because then the majors remain strong. I guess the counter to that argument is, well, look at tennis, and they really don't get anybody's attention until they come together those 4 weeks. The players are reading books between points, which I can't believe, by the way, somebody did that recently. And of course, remember when Courier did that? Yeah. I mean, people were really annoyed with him when he opened up a book. Who was it recently? Anyway, a player, down in Australia, I think. Anyway, which of course the insinuation is I'm really bored with this match and I'm killing some time, but before we change sides. And so, you could say, well, let's look what happened to tennis. So I get that argument as well. I get both arguments. And I don't, Yeah, but I think at some point it's going to be clear that they're not going to have an agreement, and all these entities are just going to have to come together to the majors, tweak the system that gets players to them, and let the tours deal with their problems on their own. And probably not the best thing for the sport. But yeah, and then of course we know the other underlying element to this is the people actually paying the money on the media side. At some point, they either get mad, they file lawsuits, or they try to opt out, or and they've got their own problems. You know, there's been a lot of negative stories lately about Paramount. The Disney thing is still all over the place, although they're paying a very small amount. Comcast, yeah, all the merger talk stuff, Warner Brothers Discovery's not going well under Zaz. So yeah, the media side is, although I still think they have a good solid deal for what they pay and what they're getting. And so there's just so many elements on so many sides of this. And then we know, of course, there's certain corporations that are still very happy with what they get out of sponsoring event, but there are definitely plenty more that aren't. And it's a big old mess. And I guess where it matters to us is that you want to have, like, I've was thinking about how much I've enjoyed these last few weeks. It just reminded me again, the best thing about the PGA Tour is actually when somebody makes a life-changing check and has a life-changing week. And the negative has been that the Matthew Pavons and the Nick Dunlap stories and Austin Eckroat and Jake Knapp, the thing that makes those stories just a little bit better is when they do beat somebody you've heard of. You know, that's the tangible thing, and the real satisfaction of those wins. That didn't quite happen as well. Dunlap, you know, held off Justin Thomas, and I've already forgotten who else. But yeah, he held off a pretty good field for the Bob Hope.
Oh, yeah, Sam Burns.
Sam Burns,
the other
right, an established tour player and Ryder Cup member and all that. And that, to me, those stories, that's the tour's bread and butter. So then you go to Bay Hill, and they go, "We got all the stars," and you're like, okay, great. And there are a couple of people in that field who, if they won it, the 3-year exemption, the check would be life changing. And that may happen. But by the way, I'm sorry, Lawrence. One other thing. The Honda, I mean, first, NBC's just, it's just a mess. They're all talking too much, and they're just everybody has to get it in a thought. And if I hear them say one more time, the fields have never been deeper, how can you say that when they're spread all over the world? I mean, come on, guys, stop saying that. And we know it's just not the case. It's stop. There's this, the fields are splintered. The equipment's bringing people together. Just, anyway, I know they have to say it to justify why you're watching a bunch of people you've never heard of, but it's insulting at this point.
Just going back to Keith Pelley, there was another couple of interesting things I thought that he actually went as far as criticizing some of he didn't name names, obviously, some of the PGA Tour players who are clearly in privacy of all these talks have expressed no desire to travel beyond the 51 states or 50 states rather, 51 states.
Yeah, let's go
yeah,
with
so I
50.
thought that, yeah, let's go with 50. Well, I'm thinking about DC. That's the thing. So can you imagine just how frustrated he is for him to actually go to the length of expressing such a thought in public? So it really, we've been talking about this for months. You especially, what's the word I'm looking for? Well, just the reluctance to, see beyond the United States to see golf as a global game. Pelley, he's obviously run into that to a huge extent, and to such to and his frustrations such that he is talking about it in public. I thought that was quite telling.
That told me that there are a couple events we would love to know what they were that he really fought for as becoming whatever you want to call it, signature events. We assume the Scottish is the obvious no-brainer because of the quality of the sponsor and the date, and the lineage of the event, blah blah blah. The convenience, most of the guys play it anyway, and he still couldn't get that as a signature event. I'm assuming there has to be another
I would
maybe
imagine
the
it
BM,
wouldn't.
maybe
Yeah, I was going to
Wentworth.
say the BM. Yeah, Wentworth probably. Yeah,
and the stupid FedEx Cup got in the way of that, I'm sure. But so yeah, that was telling, and of course it's so nauseating if you've studied the history of the game. I mean, I'm doing some work on Troon right now, and you just see, you know, Sarazen went over in 23, and he had to call. He was the best player in the world. He had to qualify, and he didn't qualify. Had to go get on a ship, and he has to play the Portland course, which, you know, he ripped, he didn't like, and then he never even got to play the Open at Troon because he didn't qualify, and he had to get back on the transatlantic voyage. These guys could get on a plane with a cabin with their own shower, and it's just
well. Just in terms of their own, I know you hate this phrase, but in terms of their own personal brand, you know, has Jordan Spieth and they've obviously had great press, Spieth and Justin Thomas, ever had better press than when they went and played in the Scottish Open at Renaissance and spent the night or the evenings, those beautiful late summer evenings playing on playing in North Berwick?
Of course.
Jordan Spieth went to Australia and played in the Aussie Open a few times and, you know, got brilliant press for it. They love them in Australia. He went and played all the Sandbelt courses. I think it was him and his brother. He always slung a bag on his back. The pictures were great. It grew, you know, it got people talking about golf in Australia. He won the tournament. He went back the following year, credit to him. I really don't get it. You know, why wouldn't you want to do it?
My only hunch on that is, I think he would agree with you, by the way. He's on the record saying Now he has a family now, so he's changed a little that way. But my hunch is that the digging in on just staying in America is about preserving the television contract and the model here. And then obviously the new investors are all U.S. based people. Now LeBron and Drake are involved. So all those people with the well, I'm not even going to go there, but they don't have a lot of fans. I wonder why. I wonder what is it about LeBron? Oh, sorry. I think that it has to be a business component to that thinking. I'm not saying that's the way. I have no idea about the others, but I would say Spieth. And maybe even Thomas a little bit. There are players who do get the argument, but I think they've just decided we've got this contract. We have to preserve that. And then you have to remember the new enterprises model. They got to make money from this thing. So it's the PGA Tour operating events in the U.S. with championship management and whatever else they have up their sleeve. And it just sounds like it's all about, to me, it's about business and a lack of imagination. I think there's some of that too.
Yeah, absolutely. The other, I found this the most interesting. I'll read the quote or the paragraph in its entirety so people can get a sense of it. Pelley refused to be drawn into what the future beyond his tenure may look like. One scenario that has been quietly mooted is that the PIF could seek to invest in the DP World Tour independently of the PGA Tour. To which Keith Pelley didn't say, what a ludicrous idea. I would never have anything so ridiculous in my entire life. No, he did not say that. What he did say was that would be speculation and a question for Guy. That's Guy Kinnings, his successor. He says before offering a more and blah, blah, blah about Jay Monahan, his great close personal friend, Jay Monahan. Anyway, I thought, again, that's something to me, the fact that he didn't dismiss this suggestion out of hand is very, very telling for me. I'd go as far as say I would be shocked, Jeff, if there isn't some arrangement between the Saudis and the European Tour around and about that McIlroy idea, that PIF idea. That's such an obvious play. And, you know, if that happens, what happened with the Indian Premier League is that it became hugely popular and really had the more traditional forms of cricket looking at, you know, at their product. And it really was a real wake-up call.
and it remains really popular to this day. And that could happen in golf if the Saudis and the European Tour, some combination of, you know, the McIlroy idea, the Saudis, the European Tour, other money floating around in the world, you know, Hero, perhaps Johan Rupert, that could be very, very appealing, especially if it is a place where all the best players in the world can come together every week or every event, and they would get access to world ranking points. It seems like an ideal solution for everybody.
Can you help us Americans in the audience just give a short version of basically how they broke from classic cricket?
Well, actually, this got, I mean, not to bore people, if you go and read, I think it's issue 6 of McKellar, or by issue 7 of McKellar, actually, it's in there. Our good friend Robert Lucetic wrote a story called Pajama Cricket. It goes back to the mid-80s. Actually, some of the people involved in LIV Golf were involved in pajama cricket. It was essentially a media mogul called Kerry Packer tried to buy the TV rights for Australian Test cricket. The Australian cricket board wouldn't give it to him. They had a big falling out. So he set up his own cricket league, and it was a much faster version of the game. The teams all played in different coloured uniforms. That's why it was called pajama cricket. Mm. Keep on calling it cricket. And he just bought the LIV model. LIV copied it straight from Kerry Packer. He just bought all the best players in the world. He bought the Australian cricket captain. You just got the guy to name his number, and he went and transformed the game. The Indian Premier League is essentially just another version of that. A kind of whiz bang. Guys come from all over the world for a short season, a kind of whiz bang form of the game. It's all kind of bells and whistles. Very, very popular, very lucrative for all involved, especially the players. And again, a real shock to the system of cricket. Again, McIlroy outlined it when he floated the idea. Something along that lines in golf would be, as I say, given the particular circumstances of the moment, a place where players, you know, regardless of their affiliations, can go and play. I mean, that's what happens with the Indian League. It's a no-brainer when you think about it.
And so my question then is, how did they? I know the Olympics going to that using that format helped, but how did they overcome the sense that it was how did it not, you know, because we know with LIV the problem is the 54 holes, the team names, some of the people they signed initially, you know, they there's been more of a conversation about the legitimacy of the way it's played. How did the Indian League overcome that, or have they? Are there still people who think it's
again, this legitimate? Is getting
No, I just want to know because I think it's interesting comparison.
Well, what eased the way for the Indian Premier League is that foreshortened cricket has long been a part of the cricket landscape. You know, it used to be you would have county cricket or state cricket, depending on which country it was, and it was very staid. Then the main focus, the big events of the year would be test matches, which are these...
Right.
Over 5 days, where one match is played over 5 days between nations. Then you had the introduction of one-day cricket, which would be 40 overs. So an over is 6 balls. You have 40 or 50 overs each side. And some, you know, in Test cricket, the project is to stay in as long and score slowly and protect your wicket. In these 60 over matches, it was a bit more open. People would maybe play shots. You know, a bit more exciting than the test match, and it was over in one day. And then that became 20 over matches. And then you had T10, 10 over matches. So there was a tradition within cricket of foreshortened games. But that's the problem with LIV Golf. That's the problem with LIV Golf. There's nothing... LIV Golf had nothing to set the table for itself. It just came out of nowhere. It landed on a distant planet, a planet golf. So that's where I think the resistance comes. That's where I think it's having problems getting a foothold. Unlike the Indian Premier League, the audience, the world global audience was used to foreshorten cricket. They just made it an even a higher energy form of what had been there before, and a bit more exciting and a bit more, you know, bells and whistles. The problem that LIV has, the ground was never laid for what they are offering right now. That's the difference.
Okay. Well, it's interesting. So, and it's good to know that because I think it's going to be something that it just gets mentioned so often. And it's good for us to understand why that model works and or has worked. And as we watch LIV, and by the way, I think LIV has gotten a foothold in certain markets when they go to the right course and the right market at the right time. And obviously last week would be an example of when they do not do that. going to Jeddah. And I mean, nobody there. Just, oh, so lifeless, so bad. By the way, the Honda did not have great crowds compared to what it used to have, I thought, as well. But yeah, yeah. I don't know any numbers.
We are,
excuse me, the Cognizant.
We are coming to the end of, we should really get out of this, Jeff. Do we want to mention the Cognizant? It was won by Austin Eckhart. Is that, how do you pronounce
Eckhart.
His name?
Eckhart. Yeah, good player.
He looked a good player, actually. Really, he played, I actually watched it Monday morning. I thought he played beautifully, really, really nicely. And he's a good player, Walker Cup player, good record as a college player.
Great record.
Not an absolute superstar.
He's an All-American four times. That's a big deal.
I'm not sure. Again, Jeff, another example of you don't have to hit it miles. You only have to hit it far enough. You don't have to hit it far. You've got to hit it far enough. I thought he played beautifully and deserving. I was really pleased to see Jake Knapp. I think he might be the best story to come out of all this. These last few weeks, I think he looks like a proper player. And he wasn't quite contending, but he was paired with McIlroy, I think, 3 days. And I think he ended up beating McIlroy. I really think he's the best story to come out of this.
No question.
This period. Yeah.
He did a walk and talk while he's contending, while he's playing with Rory. He acts like he's been, he's a fantastic story. Yeah. That's the kind of thing that just makes the tour different, and why we like it at its best is somebody like that. And why, as you know, why I rail on about the youth desperation syndrome, because and Austin Eckhart's 25, I think, but again, it's a weird sport, and it takes some time and experience to get something. And sometimes people, you have to get away from it and then something clicks. It's just a weird, this idea that you can just throw somebody out there, plug them in, and they're going to be a perfectly performing entity is nuts. And it's, but it's also, I mean, it's the difficulty of the job, but it's also the beauty of golf is that somebody finds something and they make that life-changing check. It's much more gratifying as a viewer to me to see those things happen. And of course the European stories we've seen, seeing the Finn almost win and Matthew Pavon. And I did think that was not a great defense, by the way, of Keith Pelly of the of the Matthew Pavon story. And now when he comes back to the France Open, such a superstar. I think he gave up too many spots of European players there, Keith.
It was a good question to ask,
by the way.
He really has. Yeah, Jeff, you're dead right. I think Tiger, then Rory, and then Spieth, it kind of fooled everybody. They think, you can just come out and you can dominate from these 21, 22. You're seeing it now. Jake Knapp's 29, I think. Wyndham Clark's 31. Pavon's 31, 32.
Yeah.
I'm thinking Eckhart's just out of college. Well, hang on a minute. He's 25. He's almost 26. Yeah. So we're heading towards people probably hate this. We're lacking a superstar, I guess. Golf is lacking a superstar. But these guys that come out, you have to pay your dues. And you just can't come out and dominate. That's only the very few can do that. Maybe this Thor Bjornsson kid will come out next year.
he might surprise a few people. I think he'll win that PGA Tour University car. Of course, if he gets that car, he might get about four starts on the PGA Tour. given the way that, you know, guys are struggling to get starts, you know, you think you've got a Corn Ferry Tour card, and yeah. Anyway, we'll leave it at that. Jeff, any other business? Are you quite content? We've picked over everything.
Do we want to go into Paul Azinger, or do you want to save that for another time?
Does anybody miss Paul Azinger? Did Paul Azinger ever give any moments of broadcasting where you just thought, wow, that's really good, that's really insightful, that's really provocative, that's really, you know, that's going to make me sit down for another half hour? It always comes back to Johnny Miller. I mean, all these guys appear to be, Trevor Immelman's a different kind of broadcaster, so he's got a different kind of appeal, and I like that. He suits CBS and he suits the team. But NBC, because of the tradition of Johnny Miller, but none of these guys that they've got coming in, I don't miss Paul Azinger. I would be shocked if anybody else did.
Well, you must not have watched much of the Honda, but it was. It's like they're doing a radio broadcast. They're just all talking. Somebody says something, they got to let you know they agree with the point. And the beauty of Johnny, we used to laugh at when Raj and Gary would always agree with Johnny, but at least they did it in very few words and they did it quickly. And of course, the genius of Johnny was he was so succinct. He would flesh out an idea now and then, but he had a quick reaction to things. He didn't say a lot. He got in and out, and they have just decided apparently it's just a free for all and everybody talk. And I love Steve Sands, lovely guy. I don't need to hear Steve's analysis. And now he feels the need to chime in. I don't know what the concept is. I know it's not Tommy Roy's concept. It's just not how he works. But I thought one of the most interesting things in that interview was that Azinger got a message early on to be careful. Like, he wanted to compare the rough to Don King's hair, you know, which was probably more offensive in that it was probably a dated reference, because I think,
well, I was going to say
probably,
that, who would get
probably
would get
dead
that
at that point. But I mean, look, the idea that McEnroe, Barkley, these great analysts that we like, Johnny, even they sometimes just blurt out what's on their mind. And I guess where it got different with Paul was as he got, we saw at the Ryder Cup, it started to take on all these weird elements of nationalism and some weird, kind of anti-European sort of rah-rah stuff, which, again, Johnny did that too. But Johnny, you never felt like Johnny was insulted that the Europeans were beating America. He was just pro USA. That's who Johnny was. But he didn't take it personally in some way, and Paul did start to get a weird edge there. So I thought that was interesting that he felt early on that he was kind of scolded into not being himself, because no, he's a great swing analyst when he's on, and that part I think kind of disappeared from their shows. And so I didn't think he was great in his last year or two, but I think you need to listen. Well, you'll get the NBC the next 2 weeks. You tell me. You didn't sit through Fridays with Smiley on Friday afternoon, which I, for some reason, tortured myself with. And it was just brutal, absolutely brutal. And, I mean, Luke Donald barely got to speak because of this new format they have. I think he's working again this week, so we'll see.
Yeah, I did spend half an hour with Luke Donald, and I just thought he didn't really say anything. I would, again, it's his first week. Who knows if he even wants to do it as a career. I've got to be careful with the Northwestern connection. I thought Luke was fun.
Yeah, and this bake sale, throwing people in thing. I mean, we saw Kisner from week one to his second stint got way better. And he wasn't horrible the first time. He just didn't say anything. But then he was better. I mean, it takes time. It's not easy. And then when you got all these people chiming in, Byram and Faxon and hell, I don't even know what Faxon's talking about half the time. It makes me laugh, but I'm sure I can just picture. I always go to Frank Cherkinian for some reason, and I just picture him with his face in his hands. Like, stop telling us what we just saw on television. Give us some insight into something else. And so, but anyway, we only discuss this because it is important to We know the part of the reason the Masters is the Masters is because of the broadcast. Part of the reason the USGA, the US Open declined a little bit was the broadcast. The Open Championship to me is hurt by certain elements. So the presentation and the PGA, I think part of the PGA's lift in recent years has been what the combination of CBS upping their game and ESPN bringing a little something to push them and that kind of stuff. So it is important. And yeah, it's hard to judge somebody though. I mean, just being thrown into that. And but Paul just let him, I mean, he just came right out and said, I mean, his comments about the PGA Tour basically being a feeder tour, I think were picked up by a lot of publications. And it was fascinating. He said he wouldn't even entertain the idea of working anything related to the tour again. So that to me was a statement about some of the pushback he may have gotten that he didn't discuss from, I mean, he basically said there was a captain's club meeting, and I thought this was a little unfair that Monahan was at the memorial, and everybody was in there, Jack, Tiger, Fred Ridley, you know, that group is it's interesting. And I think it was a few days before the June 6th thing. And he said, Jay gave them no, he didn't give him any indication. He took that as a huge insult. Well, they were trying to keep it quiet for a reason and it would have leaked. So I didn't buy that as the reason he has such strong feelings now. Cause he used to be Mr. PGA Tour. And it just tells me, I think he got a lot of pushback about his announcing from Pontevedra, and that's why he won't entertain that. That's just how I read it, but I don't know. And of course he just slaughtered him for what we know, the cost cutting. And I've heard some stuff lately, by the way, Lawrence, on the cost cutting, that is just unbelievable. So it's a shame, and it's really could not be at a worse time, because as we know, golf needs its broad. I mean, we see it with CBS. We need what they've done. We need those broadcasts to be good to make the whole thing work. So anyway, it was fascinating timing and all that good stuff. And I'm sure it had people running around in circles at Comcast, although all they care about are the Olympics. So there you go.
I had a few dealings with Easinger over the year. I always found him great, actually, really good to deal with and really quotable, as Adam Shupak found out. That was a great interview in Golf Week, if you haven't read it.
Yeah.
People should go and read it. Just came across just like a guy, a better guy who...
Really?
You know, didn't get his contract. Yeah, I did.
I thought he laid out if he was bitter. They just did not negotiate in good faith. And that was about how I had heard it went down, that there were talks and and then all of a sudden, just one day, they just decided we're moving on. And I mean, there may be more there. We don't know. But I don't think that's a reason to – I think he has the right to be bitter. If you're going in a negotiation and then suddenly they just – and he claimed they were basically in agreement on most of the big stuff, and they were going to come back with another money offer, he and his agent. And they didn't give him that chance. To have been in agreement on other stuff, and I don't, it just seemed a little bit shady. So
we'll leave it at that. I did see somebody suggesting that Charles Barkley should do the job. Apparently, Charles Barkley.
That was Paul.
A year. Well, there you go.
Yeah, I don't know what he was thinking. He's telling us Comcast doesn't want to pay for anything, and then he's throwing out the guy who makes a ton of money. So I don't know what he was thinking.
I think after Charles Barkley's performance, actually part of the team performance on the match, I don't think he's worth $20 million for anybody's money covering golf.
Oh, one last thing we do have to discuss. Corrigan wrote a good piece on Slugger and the slow play penalty with Liv. I thought was really interesting, and juxtapose it with Jay Monahan's comment about, it's actually more entertaining when they're slow. I mean, that wasn't exactly what Jay said. Actually, I read that quote and I thought, I remember reading that at the time, and I still don't know what the hell Jay was saying, but it's a good piece if you have a Telegraph subscription, which most people don't, but it's he highlighted the only thing I have a problem with, Lawrence. I just think after word got out that Anthony Kim had 7 minutes to look for a lost ball, that Slugger was looking for a way to remind the world that we are playing by the rules of golf. There was just a, you know, a little one fell through the cracks.
Very good.
And Adrian Meronk happened to. And by the way, how is it that Adrian Meronk in a group with Jon Rahm and Kevin Na is the one that takes the blame? I think we know who the really, really slow player in that group is, but yeah.
Well,
his
good
name
point.
Is not John Rahm.
Good point. I haven't read the Corrigan piece. I'll get around to doing that. But yeah, I think you're probably right. Slugger White's trying to restore. Which goes again to the credibility of the brand. Credibility of the, if you're allowing guys to look for the ball for 7 minutes, my goodness. We will leave it on that note. Thanks for dialing in, Jeff. I'll hopefully speak to you next week. All the best.
Yeah, get some sleep. Yeah, take care.
It's a wide open road. It's a wide open road.